Yes, I can't imagine. You know, it's beyond our imagination what they must be like, I think. Right. Yeah, no, it's...
But it would simply be your reality, wouldn't it?
Sure.
You have no experience of anything.
I mean, I get that, but it would still be extraordinary. Even though it's your only experience, it must still be an extraordinary experience to never be separate from another.
No, exactly. And
mentality,
the permanence of that.
Yeah, no, is it?
I imagine that I did a case study on a twin, and so did a lot of sort of research about twins. And the thing that comes up quite often, or maybe seems obvious, is that what. You know, an individual twin will think the other has all the good in them, I'm the bad.
Okay, yeah.
But if you were conjoined to any part of your body, then that would probably obviously intensify that even more, wouldn't it? And if you had more physical space than the other that was close to you, you could feel that you were the bad one even more because you're taking...
Especially if it depends where you're conjoined as well, because you might never see the person that you're conjoined to.
We're constantly conflicted within ourselves, aren't we? We live with...
If they're conjoined, there must be a sense of almost being... the connection being so strong, almost a sense of... not being the same person, but I don't know, almost something like that, if you're conjoined at that level.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about this, to be honest, to know. I don't know.
Anyway, I think we're going down
maybe,
a rabbit
maybe
hole.
Maybe we're in the confusion.
Well, I think we are a bit, because I don't think any of us really know enough about this to properly talk about it. But I think it's, there is that whole kind of territory of conjunction and separation, and the is just so central to human life somewhere, and kind of, and so how, and in a way what we're looking at here in the dualistic world really is that place where, in order for non-dual love to, so what the Tree of Life shows us here is that the expression, there are if you like two expressions in dualism of non-dual love. The one is through will and through that love manifesting as the will, and then it manifesting as presence. Now in this path we have that non-dual love manifesting through the image of the chariot card and the yoking of things together and this strong sense of will and centeredness. But in the connection with Tiferet, we have the whole sense of conjunction in the chemical marriage, so the love bringing together the opposites, so that they're just present in Tiferet. So that's got quite a different feeling, although the Hebrew letter attached to this path is the letter Zain, that is the sword. So again, we've got this always when we look at the tree, there are these kind of, so we've got conjunction, and we'd probably, you know, the rational part of our mind would be happy with Vav being there, which is the letter of conjunction, but what is there is the letter Zain, the sword that separates. So here there's something about the presence of non-dual love manifesting through an union that is also a separation. Here we have the movement of the non-dual love manifesting as movement through stillness and containment. So that's where the tree, I think, really kind of works. It never gives us a simple answer that our mind can just say, oh, right, we'll do that then. It actually confronts us, particularly this level, but all through the tree, really. It confronts us with paradox and illusion and, oh, God, that doesn't really make sense. What the hell does that mean? So it's intended to stir up inquiry and deconstruction, which is really what that first chapter of the book of the Heart Go to the Serpent is all about. It's really about that. And in a sense, just to come back to that for a moment, that place where the adept figure says, well, I know I am the embodied in flesh, I am the living image of the divine. And then the angel really completely calls the figure on that, because that's a conceptual simulacrum of that kind of deeper kind of unity, which then the angel presents us with the image of actually, no, you're like the sad old bloke trying to count his muscles rather than the person who is actually unified. And the image is interesting because the image is the person who is reaping the harvest. So the one who is unified reaps the harvest of the work, not the one who just spends the time counting their muscles.
Maybe it's a bit like identifying with the idol, believing that it's your idol.
Yes, it is. Well, it's exactly that, isn't it?
I am.
It's exactly that.
That's God's image.
Yeah, that's exactly the problem, right? And that is the problem when you have experience of the path. Not an experience, because actually, because the problem really, once you understand the tree of life, when you have worked, particularly when you've worked as long as me, you have to keep on deconstructing stuff, because it's so easy to create a simulacrum of experience, a fantasy experience based on memory, rather than to keep entering into the mysterious nature of unknowing.
I've got a question or a thought which we can't answer, but.
Okay.
So the. What did you say? The mysterious.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Okay, I don't know. It's gone.
So my sense is in death, we then connect with the non-dual being. Of course we don't know, but I'm just wondering, I mean,
no, I don't. Well, I'm not sure that happens automatically. I mean, certainly, quite a number of dead people I've met are not like that.
But essentially, I think they then connect with their angel to work through all this, and then get connected, and then go off with that. Essentially, in the end.
That's one version.
Yeah. Sticking with that.
That's Dante's version, isn't it?
It is Dante's version, ultimately, yes. But actually, Dante's version is interesting. Dante's version is a good version because there's a whole process that has to happen before you get to that. So he has to, you know, Dante, it's a journey through hell, through the mountain of Purgatorio, and only then do you get into the divine place. So I think, you know, when people are dead, I mean, certainly the dead people I've met some very trapped dead people who are completely lost down here and haven't moved. But even people who are not trapped, who I've met, are at different levels of working this through.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
so
some go off with their angel and go off. Or we just don't know.
Well, no. In my experience, very few people get trapped. Okay. That's not very common, fortunately. It's much more common that people are in an intermediate place, and they'll come back to say hello from time to time, like somebody would if you can perceive them, and so otherwise they don't much. When I've encountered people doing that, which is rare, because it's not very often, they are definitely expanded beings. Right, they've grown, they've developed. Certainly, they're inhabiting much more of the angel in themselves. But they're not fully enlightened beings or anything like that. They're living their life on the other side of whatever is on the other side. And in a certain sense, when I've had conversations at that level, what they experience is being in somewhere that is solid to them as being here is for us. Right. So they don't. It's more them coming here is them entering the dream place, where we feel like dreamlike and less substantial than they are.
No.
Okay, from our side of things, because they're the other side of the mirror from us, they are the insubstantial beings, right, which we notice with intuition or through our subtle senses, and then we're never sure, did I imagine that, did that really happen or not? And there's something a bit similar that happens with them, but because they're in a more aware place, I think they're not maybe quite as confused as we are about it. But nonetheless, we feel less substantial than the place that they are in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's certainly my.
I was just thinking, when we go into a dream, the dream seems so real.
Yes, it is. Yeah, but the dream, of course, the dream is real for us in it. But yes, that's true. I see what you mean. Yes. So in the same way, the dream is real for them. Their experience is real. I get that.
So,
yeah, go.
This is another Confusion question. So where does reincarnation play into that, do you think?
Well, I think at certain points, I think people decide to be reincarnated. I think there's a, but I think where I take issue with it, like the Tibetan view of that is it like happens instantaneously.
Yes, like 49 days later.
No, and certainly, you know, in my limited experience, that doesn't seem to be what happens. Some people vanish immediately and maybe they do get reincarnated immediately. Other people seem to first hang around or then exist on subtle levels while they're working something else through and then take incarnation. I don't think it's as mechanistic as the Tibetan thing. I mean, Tibetan thing has so many rules about, and so I don't think it's that mechanistic really. I think there's always, for me at least, it feels like there is a time when somebody might choose to be incarnated again, having absorbed the impressions of this life and then making another step really.
Because presumably, and again, this is a thought rather than anything else, but presumably you would reincarnate because you haven't quite managed to get round, well, not like be the wheel, but in this case, into the supernal.
Yes, that's right. So you would be looking for some further experience that would help you to do that. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, it's...
just incarnate because you'd like to come back down here again.
Well, that's what the Celt—that's the idea of Celts, wasn't it? There's no idea of progression or anything. You get the impression that they just love life, so they go around again.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think if I can always best try and answer these things from my own experience. So the limited experience I have of prior incarnations, which is faint now, used to be much clearer when I was much younger. Again, it's the sense of a consistent thread of something needing to be worked out. Right, so the thread that I suppose, you know, so if I think of my own life, which I think, you know, this is, rather than being theoretical about this, so if I go right back to my earliest kind of memories, I have this sense of I've been this, God knows why I choose this family, but anyway, I do choose this family in this small place in Wales. I have this sense of myself, even very small, as inhabiting this big space, this shining darkness. So I, like the home is it for me, even when I'm very tiny, is this shining darkness that I know that I come from, and that I can access. I can feel, if I get very still and very quiet, I can feel into this shining darkness. And there's a sense of having come here, and this sense of in the background of the shining darkness, there are these other shapes, other lives, I suppose, but I wouldn't have known to explain it like that in those days, other than there were these things that have led to this particular life, I guess. And the sense I have had in that day, which is not so clear now, is this sense of all time and space happening simultaneously. So those other lives, other places, other shapes are connected somewhere. And so I'm here to do some bit of that, some bit of whatever that pattern that these different shapes, different lives are trying to create. And in my case, and it certainly, you know, is what happens in my life this time around anyway, is I enter into this very disturbed family, very isolated family. I have this very isolated life in my early life where I'm very much thrown back on my own resources and sort of and back on inner resources, and have all kinds of horrible experiences when I'm small. And as a result of that, spend a lot of time out in nature, can't bear to be in the house. So I learn a lot about nature, a lot about silence, a lot about being in the land and in the world. And then at a certain point in my life, really, I encounter the Kabbalah, I encounter, when I'm 18, I encounter Ernest Butler and Tom Olerman, and these threads get taken up in a particular kind of a way. And certainly as my life has turned out, you know, I can really understand why I needed these very painful, difficult experiences. I was talking with Holly earlier on today about my friend David Spangler, who is this glorious, radiant being, but who doesn't really understand depression and pain and couldn't do the kind of work that I do.
Not recording, are you?
Hmm?
Are you recording?
Only for ourselves. Okay. Nobody else sees it but us. Yeah. So the difference here really, in a certain sense, is that we are is our what I how I see things really, I suppose, is based on my own early experience. I don't know about reincarnation and things until much later on in my life, which I learn about through Lobsang Rampa. Tuesday Lobsang Rampa. The first time I learned about reincarnation is that this guy called Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, who's really called Cyril Hoskins, and who is an orthopedic and salesman from Plymouth, but who writes a series of wonderful books, imaginative books, pretending to be a Tibetan Lama. And this is the first time I hear about reincarnation, but it kind of makes sense to me because of these very early experiences. And very early on, I would not have had any sense of that, but I had a sense of something, this life emerging out of something. And then the sense of the shining darkness that was always my refuge place, no matter whatever was happening to me, that there's a place I could go where I could make myself very quiet and still and would feel comforted. And, you know, there's a... and then a bit older in my life, that there's a whole process of feeling that there was a, I guess this is a more conscious sense of the angel figure, there was a sense of a Roman warrior, Roman centurion, or legionnaire, who didn't matter, but anyway, Roman soldier, watching over me to protect me. I think that's an image of the angel somewhere. So I think we can get very theoretical about them, but I think it's when we go back to the beginning of our lives, if we can do that, we often will find the roots of our particular relationship to the angel, our particular, and actually the other place that we find that is in the things that continually draw our attention in our life. What inspires us? What are we drawn to? What's interesting to us? So if when you look back at your life and you see consistent threads like that, that's often got the quality of the sense of the angel in it. Okay, really quickly, because we've just got one. Well, okay, well, we'll ask it, and if I can't answer, give you a quick answer, we'll answer it tomorrow.
You can just give me a quick answer and don't have to go into the detail.
Yeah.
But did you then go on to remember your past lives and work with that and get a sense of what you're here to do in this life based on those?
Not quite like that. I mean, I sort of, you know, as my early training in Kabbalah developed, it's like I did get some senses of some of the details of those lives. But in a sense, that wasn't the important bit. And in a sense, that could have been... I mean, Tom really helped me with that, because I could have got a bit fascinated by that, because there's a particular life, a particular where I die under torture in the Middle Ages. And the thing about... The thing that is dangerous and actually complicated about the actual memory of past lives is you don't remember them neutrally. You are flooded by the feelings.
From the past.
So I remember being flooded by the rage and fury and the sense of betrayal and the desire to hurt, you know, and it's like a possession thing that kind of happens.
Yeah, right. That's dangerous.
It is, and I think in a way there's a whole way of, we'll talk more about it another time maybe, but I think there's something about, so Tom really discouraged me from really looking into that, and actually you don't need to look into that, because actually the reality of what you're there to do is there anyway. You don't need the details, because the problem is you're recalling a past personality when you do that. Now, if you look at Dion Fortune's book, The Goatfoot God, that novel, that really deals with the problems of that. And actually, in the book, that figure of Ambrosius, who's the medieval abbot, who, rather similarly to my own past life experience, gets destroyed, that figure has to be dealt with, and in a certain sense, exercised and dealt with, because otherwise it dominates the present personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We don't really need to go back to the past to work out the threads of what we're doing.
It's here anyway, right? You don't need that.
It's work with the echo of it, which is being defined.
Yeah, that's right, and the echo of it is here anyway, just in our current interests and things, and it can be a bit dangerous. Sometimes it is necessary to do that, because there is the eruption from the past. So sometimes you have to do that because the past intrudes. But generally speaking, it's wise to leave it alone, to be honest.
That's one training I don't have to do then.
Will you do like a good training, Will Duncan? So you never know. Feel free, you know.
I was looking at it.
You should get more free time. Yeah.
If it could be fun. Who knows?